Let's dive back into our look at the temple being built by Solomon by opening to 1 Kings chapter number 6. And if you can, pull out the parallel passage in 2 Chronicles chapter number 3. It is hard to describe this. And even when I try to do some of this stuff in SketchUp, which I've got very basic functionality in that, we've got information missing that would help us fill in some of the fine detail gaps. And so as we go through this, we'll major in the major things and we will speculate in the minor things, if you will. So far, we know that the worship area, that is the holy place and the holy of holies at the back side of that, is completely paneled in. There's none of the core building stones that can be seen from inside of this worship area. It's all paneled on the walls and the ceiling with cedar. And it's got the floorboards made of cypress. Walls are carved with cherubim, palm trees, flowers, gourds. And then all of that has been covered in probably molten gold, painted on, and then the flatter areas, I guess, have been really polished to a mirror surface. And the other places are buffed up in such a way that they really shine with their 3D representation of things. The floor also is covered in gold and probably buffed up or shined up to be mirror-like. So when the priests walked into this place day by day, it would have been a stunning experience. But we have more information now. We're in 1 Kings chapter 6, verse number 31. For the entrance to the inner sanctuary, so that's the Holy of Holies, he made doors of olive wood, so same wood that he used for those gigantic cherubim statues that are overshadowing the place where the Ark of the Covenant is going to be. And he also made it, used that wood to make the lintel, and the doorposts were five-sided. Now, this is basically the frame for the opening from the holy place in front where the priests do their daily work into the Holy of Holies where the Ark's going to be and where the high priest goes once a year. So attached to that opening framework are two doors. Verse 32, he covered the two doors of olive wood with carvings of cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers. So the same thing that he did to the walls. He overlaid them with gold and spread gold on the cherubim and on the palm trees. So again, it's all gold covered. Now, these doors then swing on pivots. And they're probably open most of the time, but they can be closed to bar access into the Holy of Holies. Now, did they close them every night? I don't know. We don't have the details on that. But it is possible. Verse 33. So also he made for the entrance to the nave, which is the holy place, the interior. So we're talking about the entrance opening from the porch into this worship area. So he also made for the entrance to the nave doorposts of olive wood in the form of a square, and two doors of cypress wood. The two leaves of the one door were folding, and the two leaves of the other door were folding. Now, that is interesting. For the entrance to the Holy of Holies, you have two solid doors that apparently swing. For the entrance into the holy place from the outside, you have two doors, but those two doors are bifolding doors. Just an interesting design to this. They probably have pivots and hinges, and may even have some sort of bearing system underneath them, a rolling bearing that allows them to fold easily open. And again, do they get closed every night? We don't know. Certainly there are no actions being done after the sun goes down and before the sun goes up. Verse number 35, on them he carved cherubim and palm trees and open flowers, and he overlaid them with gold evenly applied on the carved work. So again, got all of this, I think, probably raised imagery and then gold covered. Go over to 2 Chronicles, which deals with some other things related to this worship area. Verse 14 of 2 Chronicles 3, he made the veil of blue and purple and crimson fabrics and fine linen, and he worked cherubim on it. Now, this is parallel to what happened for the tabernacle. They had this sort of tapestry work done for a curtain between the outside of the tabernacle structure and the inside of the holy place, and from the holy place into the most holy place. Now, where does this one go? We don't know. And is it up all the time? Probably. How does it work with the doors? Well, my guess is that this curtain is there all the time, hanging either in front or behind the doors. Again, we don't have the fine details, so we can't be absolutely certain about it. Now, we know that in the New Testament temple, which is not this one, was destroyed. Zerubbabel built a budget temple in the 400s, patterned after this one. King Herod the Great renovated Zerubbabel's temple considerably, making it much more grand and ornate, and we know that that was the temple that stood when Jesus died, and the veil between the holy place and the most holy place was ripped in half from top to bottom. So we know exactly where that one was, and tradition tells us that that one was basically a handbreadth across, so about 3.5 inches thick, or probably in the folds. You know how when a curtain is closed or even hanging, it has little folds in it, and that's probably a representation of how thick those folds were. So maybe this curtain is that same curtain. Not the exact same one, you understand, but the one that's described in the New Testament passage. Verse number 15. And we're going to talk about these in a little bit more detail in a bit. In front of the house, meaning out on that front porch as part of the tower. Remember, the tower is 120 cubits tall. That's using the long cubit, that's 207 feet tall, so very, very tall. So in front of the house, he made two pillars. Now, our text here in our English Standard Version says 35 cubits high. The number 35 is in the Hebrew and in the Greek text, but in several other parallel passages about these two pillars, we discover that they're actually 18 cubits high individually. So probably this is a rounding up of how tall they are together, because 18 and 18 is 36, so that's pretty close to the 35 measurement here. So we're going to use the 18 cubit measurement for how tall these things are. And that is, by the way, just over 31 feet, so very tall. But only a small portion of how tall this tower is, because it's 207 feet tall. So he also is going to make capitals on top of this. Now, what's a capital? It's the little topper that you always see on pillars. And it's usually very ornate. The tradition is that the capitals on these pillars are in the form of an open lily bloom. And they're also going to be made of bronze, and they're described here in this way, with a capital of 5 cubits on the top of each. Now, my guess is, and again, I'm going to offer some opinion here as to how I think things fit together structurally and decoratively. I think that in the tradition of architecture of the past, the pillar was tapered, and the capital would have had an opening that would slip over the top of that tapered pillar a little bit and snug down, so that in my belief, I think that the pillar, together with its snugged-on capital, was probably about 20 cubits tall. That would be basically 34 and a half feet. And that across the top of these pillars will be some of the cross stones that support this very tall tower above these pillars. These pillars are made of bronze. They are hollow, but the bronze is 3.5 inches across, hand breadth. And I believe that they were probably placed in open bases to help them be secured at the bottom. And then after the capital was snugged onto the top of it, I think the hollow area was probably filled with sand. And that this, together with the strength of the bronze, formed a really marvelous load-bearing pillar, two of them, to take all that weight of the tower above it and maintain the opening area coming into the holy place, the worship place. Again, all of this is done to be very stunning and to present the glory of the God who is worshiped on this site. Now, remember how we mentioned chains earlier? Well, they get mentioned here again. Verse 16, he made chains like a necklace and put them on the tops of the pillars, and he made 100 pomegranates and put them on the chains, and he set up the pillars in front of the temple, one on the south and the other on the north. That on the south he called Yakin, that on the north he named Boaz. I'll get back to the names in a moment. What's the deal with these chains? We don't know for sure, other than their decoration, but I'm going to give you a suggestion based on, again, things from later in history, things related to Herod's temple. And that is, we know that any large building attracts birds, doves and pigeons in particular. And these birds soil the building. And they find all the little places that their feet can allow them to perch on. And some of these would be the edges of the building up at the top. And we know in New Testament times that the designers of Herod put needle-like pieces of metal in little sockets of lead on the very edge of all of the top of the temple. And this prohibited birds from being able to perch on the very edge. I mean, they could walk all around on the top, but they couldn't perch on the edge. And Josephus reports that that is exactly why they did it, to keep them from soiling the sides of the temple. I suspect that this chain that we're seeing here is actually a webbing, because we know that they knew how to make metal webbing, very fine metal webbing, almost like a lace, a metal lace. And I think that these were wrapped around the lily form of these capitals to stop the birds from perching in the capitals and soiling everything underneath them. They can't perch on the pillars themselves because they're vertical. But the capitals would have been a place where they could have done that. And so I think this is a very decorative anti-bird webbing. I think that's exactly what it is. And that makes me suspect that the webbing inside the temple had a similar purpose. That if any birds got loose inside the temple because of, you know, the big doors that were kept open during the day for sure, it would have prohibited them from getting into some of the places where they could perch and cause trouble. And so that's my guess, but that's all it is. Now, let's go back down to something we know well, and that is the names of these pillars. The one on the south side is called Yakin. The one on the north side is called Boaz. Now, if you are standing facing the temple, then the names of these two pillars form a basic sentence from left to right. Yakin means he shall establish. Boaz is the prepositional phrase in strength. So there is a sentence there. It may be that they had their names emblazoned on the front. He shall establish in strength. And we know from later stories that the kings of Israel stood between these two pillars to take their oath of office, to vow their allegiance to God, the overking. And so this may be a representation of that later ceremony, that the king would stand here and everybody would be reminded, he shall be established in strength, that is, in the strength of God. Just a marvelous additional detail to the building of the temple. Now, Over in the 1 Kings passage at this point, we have a mention to a courtyard that surrounds the temple building. And we don't have all the dimensions. It says he built, this is verse 36 of 1 Kings 6. He built the inner court with three courses of cut stone and one course of cedar beams. No details. My suspicion, again, based on later information, is that there was a wall placed all around the temple to limit access to it to the front gate on the east side, that you could not come into this complex except through the front gate. There was a very similar thing in the design of the tabernacle itself. And that this barrier wall was three courses of stone high. Now, how high does that make it? Well, when I did my design work in my SketchUp stuff, I guessed, based on the rooms on the outside, that each level was at least 5 cubits. So I used 5 cubit blocks. And so 5 cubits high is, that's 8 feet, 7.5 inches. So if that is something to work with, three layers of that would be 15 cubits high. And so that would mean we've got a barrier wall of 25 feet, 10.5 inches. Nobody's coming across that. Now, a little bit of additional detail is this. There seems to be a covered walkway that goes inward from this wall. And we know that Herod, when he built his Temple Mount, based on past temple construction, he made a colonnade all around the Temple Mount, a covered walkway. And I think something like that is exactly what's being described here, and that the course of cedar beams are describing the covered walkway coming in from that barrier wall on the outside, and that there would have been pillars to hold up that cedar ceiling across above that walkway. And interestingly enough, in the description of the later temples, the colonnades, the covered walkways, the porticos, were roughly 20-some feet high, 25 to 35 feet high. And so that's, I think, a good indicator that we're on the right track here, that the court around this temple built by Solomon had a perimeter-covered walkway. All right, a little something that we'll come back to from time to time. The period needed to build the entire temple complex. Verse 37 of 1 Kings 6, in the fourth year, the foundation of the house of he who was laid in the month of Ziv, that's the second month. In the 11th year, that's the 11th year of Solomon, by the way, in the month of Bul, which is the 8th month, the house was finished in all its parts and according to all its specifications. He was 7 years in building it. So 7 years from foundation to the completion of the construction work, not the finish work of all the things that are going to be going inside of it. Two of those years, I already told you, were a sabbatical year and a year of jubilee. So there were 5 full construction years used in building of the temple. Now, chapter number 7 of 1 Kings says Solomon was building his own house 13 years and finished his entire house. So then he goes into describing what happened in the 13 years following the construction of the temple. And we're not going to do all of that yet. We'll do that. We'll describe the things that he's describing here about the palace complex once we get the temple dedicated and running. Skip down to, let's see, verse number 13 of chapter number 7. Let's go a little farther up before we... this is kind of a overall, starting at verse 9, an overall description of all of this construction that happened during the first 20 years of Solomon's reign. 7 of it spent in the temple construction, another 13 spent in the palace complex construction. Verse 9, all these were made of costly stones, cut according to measure, sawed with saws, back and front, even from the foundation to the coping, from the outside to the great court. The foundation was of costly stones, huge stones, stones of 8 and 10 cubits, and above were costly stones cut according to measurement and cedar. The great court had 3 courses of cut stones all around, and a course of cedar beams, so that the inner court of the house of He Who Is and the vestibule of the house. So massive stones weighing well over a ton each, probably a couple of tons for several of them. Then the sheathing in the wood carved, and then the gold. When we come back next time, we'll talk about all the other things that were made to go along with the worship area.